And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste. I will be your host today. In the studio, first, we'll be speaking with Brenda Wright from Juno Audubon Society, talking about the Mushroom Walk this Saturday. We're going to learn about rotary bulbs and the rotary clubs. Neil Eisman will be talking about mind-body work. And we'll get an update on Eagle Crest from Matt and Jeffra. That's Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on KTOO News Juno. And if you missed the live show, it's also available at 4 on KRNN and online at ktoo.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Investigators say the Carpenter Road fire burning in Washington State was human-caused. Steve Jackson has more.
The fire broke out on the Spokane Indian Reservation on August the 13th and initially was fought by a reservation crew. Since then, numerous fire agencies have been working on that blaze, which has destroyed 42 structures and burned over 65,000 acres. Officials of the Bureau of Indian Affairs say they believe that fire was intentionally set. BIA spokesman Tom Labanino says in addition to the property damage, those responsible could face charges in connection with the death of one resident there.
So that's always possible. You know, it depends on how law enforcement interprets it and how, you know, how the laws are interpreted. He was in the process of evacuating, had a heart attack, and the fire got between him and the first responders, and they couldn't get to him in time.
The public is being asked to help law enforcement by reporting any information they may know related to the Carpenter Road fire. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
A Lakota tribal member has joined the ranks of athletes in the South Dakota Senior Games Hall of Fame. As Jim Kent reports, Wally Little Moon has been running for half a century and has no plans to stop anytime soon.
Wally Little Moon was born and raised on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. His first taste for running long distances came while attending high school and continued when he moved to Kansas to attend Haskell Indian School. As Little Moon explains, he's been running ever since.
I really love running, and when I get out on the road, it's almost like a church for me. I pray. A lot of people, a lot of friends, relatives and friends died on the road, you know, and that's where I get my strength.
The Lakota Elder has run in the South Dakota Senior Games since 2000. He also competed in four National Senior Games and the 2005 Huntsman World Senior Games in Utah. Little Moon was inducted into the South Dakota Senior Games Hall of Fame earlier this month during this year's biennial competition in Aberdeen, South Dakota. He joins 58 other South Dakota seniors who've been recognized for their athletic achievements as part of the games since 1984. Called the legend by his people, Wally Little Moon says his induction into the South Dakota Senior Games Hall of Fame came as a complete surprise. Little Moon adds that he doesn't run for recognition. He runs for the strength it gives his spirit. I'm Jim Kent.
U.S. senators are examining the Gold King Mine waste spill. The Senate Environment and Public Works Committee held a hearing this morning at the request of Colorado and New Mexico senators. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs has a hearing scheduled this afternoon. Tribes were among those impacted by the August spill caused by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. A Navajo woman was among those honored as champions of change by the White House Tuesday. Amanda Tuchin discussed mentorship during a panel session. She's involved with the Native SOAR program, or Student Outreach, Access, and Resiliency. Native graduate students mentor mostly college students, who then help guide high school students.
As we're little ones, as my little kids are here, they're already taught to think of others before themselves. It was just what we were raised to be like and to do. And so for these college students who come onto campus, they're like wanting to do some great stuff to get a degree, but they also know that they want to give back to their community. So honestly, it's not too hard to get them involved in Native SOAR, because if they can help a future Native get into college, man, it's just so powerful. It's part of their teaching. It's part of their worldview and how they see things. And so I just get the privilege and the honor to see and inspire and be inspired by them too.
The postdoctoral scholar at Arizona State University says being a good mentor and connecting with students takes just being yourself. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by WanderingBold.com, providing American Indian crafts and supplies since 1969. Shipping nationwide, virtually everything you need to powwow is at WanderingBold.com. Holiday delivery on orders placed by December 15th.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And a big welcome back to Brenda Wright, who's in the studio on a Juneau afternoon today. Brenda's with the Juneau Audubon Society, and I'm assuming I realize it's a volunteer role, but
yes.
Do you have a title or anything?
Oh, I'm a member of the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And this coming Saturday, is a sponsored event called the Mushroom Walk.
Yes.
So tell us about the Mushroom Walk.
Yeah, it's the last of our Saturday wild events that we have. After the bird migration slows down, we try to offer some other things that are interesting to the people that live here in Juneau, like a low tide walk or going up to the tram and seeing alpine flowers or mushrooms this time of year when they're in full bloom.
And mushrooms are not in full bloom the rest of the summer? Is this really like the peak season?
August and September are the peak times for us, for most of them. Some come a little earlier, and that's why it's good to know about the ones that are edible, because there's only 12 common edible mushrooms here that are safely eaten without being any danger of having some poisonous effects for yourself. And that's very important when you think about mushrooms, that you really need to know identification to be able to safely indulge in these wonderful tastes.
So this is, I think you mentioned to me before we went on the air that the class is already filled up. Is
yes,
that correct?
Yes. Unfortunately, because we have had such a great turnout the last 3 years, Dave's been a great volunteer for Audubon, giving us his time. But there were so many people that showed up because there's so much interest in Juneau that we had to limit the class sizes this year, and so they're already full,
mm-hmm.
both of them.
So that's great news for the walks themselves and the program. It may be a little disappointing for people who are interested, but that just it tells people next year you gotta get involved early or register earlier, or perhaps there'll be enough demand to actually offer a third class. So who's Dave?
Dave Gregovich is a person who's always been interested in mushrooms. He learned at his mom's knee, and he's taken seminars in places like Oregon and Washington and taken things. You know, he's very, very interested in it for himself. And so he's learned a lot about them, and he's kind enough to share his knowledge with the rest of us. He actually has a totally different day job.
So if somebody who's signed up for the class and gets to go on the Mushroom Walk on Saturday, describe the day. What are they going to do?
Well, the first thing is Dave's going to introduce them to the different forms that we'll probably see, and the things that grow on wood, and what makes a how you can tell them easily apart, like the types of caps they have, whether they're wet or dry, whether they have gills, if they have pores, those kind of all those obvious kind of things that you look for first, and then we'll go out and gather some mushrooms and we'll discuss all the ones that we find.
So for people who hike the trails, and Juneau's obviously got a lot of outdoors people who are always out there, and we see mushrooms all the time. Some people recognize them and know what they are. Others don't even think about it, but they're out there. Is the Tongass a mushroom-rich place? I mean, do we have an extraordinary number of mushrooms? I'm thinking rain. I'm thinking rainforest. I'm guessing there's a lot of mushrooms here.
Yes, yes, you're entirely right. We do have hundreds of different kinds here. And it's partly because of the good moisture and the fact that we have these species of wood, the conifer trees that they like to live on, and also the alders that rot really quickly. So we have lots of different kinds here. And it's important to, when you're out there and enjoying them, to recognize the ones that are poisonous for sure, and not put anything else in your mouth if you don't know.
So I imagine for people, people who enjoy bird watching or searching for anything, this is a bit of a treasure hunt, isn't it? When you go out looking
for
mushrooms.
Yeah, my favorite ones here are the chanterelles because they are easily identified. And for me, the best part of going berry picking is having ripe berries in your face and mushrooms at your feet. So it's a really great thing to be able to explore. It's another interesting thing, and because it's edible and tastes good, it's even more fun. It's just like berry picking. It gives you a reward for everything that you do to get them.
And just on Saturday when this group does this walk, where will they be taking the walk?
Well, we'll be in the valley this time. A lot of times we go to North Douglas. There's just hardly a place anywhere in Juneau where you cannot find mushrooms.
Check and your backyard. Yeah. Walk out your door.
Yeah, the best thing to do is, it is for a group like this, we just want to have a nice parking lot that's safely, safe for vehicles to not just be lined up on the road or something. And so, it'll be in the valley this time. And one of the nicest places around there is in the Dredge Lakes area, actually, if you want to find some nice mushrooms. But anywhere in Juneau is good.
So biggest mushrooms in the area, how do you know?
Well, the physically largest are the chicken of the woods, which usually they grow on dead spruce trees. They're really a really, really large bracket fungus. And I mean by that, they can be over 2 feet wide. And the reason that it's a nice edible because you cannot mistake it for anything. It grows on a dead tree. It's bright, bright orange on top, bright, bright yellow underneath, and it's soft. If it's not any of those things, then it's not edible.
And then I'm going to ask you about the smallest. That may be an unfair question. I mean, maybe they're so incredibly small,
yeah.
You'd never see them.
There's some that are just a couple millimeters across. There's some of the smaller parasol mushrooms. But, most of them are at least a color that contrasts with the moss. So even the very tiniest ones, the ones that are not even a quarter inch across, you can pick out if your eye is looking for them.
And there's a wide range of colors, correct?
Oh, very much so, very much so. And sometimes the really, really bright ones means poison, and sometimes it doesn't. There's some really pretty rucellas that are really, really bright maroon red, and for some people, those are edible. See, that's the trouble with mushrooms. 50% of people get sick from those, and the other 50% don't. And so even the experts once in a while feel ill, so it's important to know your mushrooms.
And you mentioned before we came on the air about a certain ones that are out right now. I think they were purple. You were describing some ones that were purple.
Oh, yeah, the dead man's fingers.
Mm-hmm.
They're a type of coral fungus. They're very soft. They are just the little columns that reach up about 5 or 6 inches. They often come in large groups, and they're just light purple, and they call them dead man's fingers.
So we're talking to Brenda Wright, who's on the board with the Juneau Audubon Society, and I think a volunteer for many, many years
mm-hmm.
with the organization.
Yes.
Yeah.
Many
and
years.
We're talking about the mushroom walk that this is taking place this Saturday. Apparently, the class is already full, so just mark that for next year, folks. You need to get signed up early. But Juneau Audubon, other upcoming events? Where
yes.
are you guys at in your calendar
yeah,
year
we're,
here?
Yeah, we're just about to start our second Thursday of every month slideshows and talks. So this first one coming up is October 8th. It's at 7 p.m., and it's at the University of Alaska Southeast Recreation Hall, Armory Building, on the Back Loop Road. And we're going to do summer slides. So if you had a fun vacation this summer, you want to bring a few slides to share, please come and visit us at 7 p.m. And then from now until from October through April, we'll do every second Thursday of every month, we'll have slideshows.
And for people who want to learn more about the organization, get involved with the organization, how do they go about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, please visit our webpage, JuneauAudubonSociety.org, or you can check us out on Facebook. We have a Bird of the Week quiz if you're interested in trying to learn a little bit more about our local birds. And if you have a nice bird picture, please do bring it to Facebook for us so that we can show it to everyone else.
So we'll end with maybe anything else about the mushroom walk that you wanted to mention or talk about.
We will be having another Saturday Wild in October for beginning birders. And it'll be on a Saturday, and it'll be on the Dyke Trail, and it'll probably start at 10 a.m. We haven't picked which Saturday yet. But we're really looking forward to having beginning people come where we'll have scopes and binoculars for everyone.
Very good. And if they just pay attention to the website, they'll see when that gets listed or posted?
Yes, and we'll post it around town. Hopefully we'll be back here, too.
You know, last question. Do you get to go on this mushroom walk? Or?
I have to because I'm helping to organize.
Well, good. Brenda Wright, thank you very much for coming in, and thanks to the Juneau Audubon Society for making the mushroom walk available for Juneau residents.
All right. Thank you so.
Algae and fungi, lichen, moss and liverworts, all are non-vascular and reproduce by spores. Algae is classified by color into five groups. They can be green or brown, golden, red or fire. Fungi lack chlorophyll, they get energy other ways, most by decomposing or fermentation. If they live on dead things, they are known as saprophytes. If they feed on living things, then they're parasites. Toadstools, molds and mildews, yeast and rots are many kinds of fungi. Some are good, some not. Lichens really two things, living symbiotically, helping each other, algae and fungi. Mosses and liverworts, found in moist environments, are simple green non-vascular spore-producing plants.
The Juneau Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is a welcoming congregation embracing many different beliefs and invites the community to join them on Sundays at 10 a.m. at the Temple Sukkot Shalom on Cordova Street in Douglas. More information is at juuf.org. This message brought to you by the Juneau Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Paul Dick, who is here, who is a Rotarian and is here in the studio to talk about rotary bulbs. And I think most or many people probably recognize that as one of the, one of the main fundraisers that the Rotary has during the course of the year. So, Paul, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. And tell us about the Rotary Bulb fundraiser.
Well, we're the Juneau-Gaspano Rotary Club. There's three Rotary Clubs in town. We meet downtown and do lots of community activities, of course, like the other Rotary clubs. But our main fundraiser is this Rotary bulbs, which is tulip bulbs, daffodils, and that type of thing for spring. And so we're selling our bulbs now for brightening up Juneau Gardens next spring. And you may have noticed out here on Egan Drive, we plant tulip bulbs in front of the Prospector. And, every spring people drive by and enjoy the color and the bulbs and that kind of thing. And so, this is an opportunity for people to buy bulbs and spruce up their gardens and think about spring, even though it's fall. And
it's a good time to think about spring.
Yeah, and there's just lots of colors and different kinds of bulbs. So we've been doing this for 14, 15 years, and it's a fundraiser for us. So some of the things we've done with the funds over the year is, and particularly last year, is we helped fund the new kitchen at the Zach Gordon Youth Center, and also did some improvements out at the Riverbend School for the playground out there. So the sale is going on now till the end of the month, and we distribute our bulbs on Saturday, October 3rd at AELP. So people order their bulbs. You can contact any Rotarian that you may know or go out onto rotarybulbs.com. And we've got a selection there. And you can, if you know a Rotarian, you can pick a Rotarian to credit your purchase with. We have a la carte items, which means you can buy an individual plant or bulb or we also have a couple of what we call pre-picked gardens, where we picked a variety of different bulbs, tulips, daffodils, grape hyacinth, and whatnot, to where, you know, if you just want the garden and you don't want to necessarily work with picking out bulbs, this is a great opportunity just to have the garden selected for you. There's also some folks are interested in helping out spruce up the community or whatever. We do have a couple rotaries, no pun intended, but the Douglas Rotary, as you go over the bridge towards Douglas, we planted tulip bulbs in there last year. And if people want to donate to that, that was, I think, just a really nice thing to see in spring, and they held up really nicely. That was our first year last year of doing that. So if you don't have a garden or don't want to plant bulbs, but you still want to help out, that's one of the things you can do is buy bulbs. And on the website or with the Rotarian, you can say, you know, I want this to go to that Rotary. This year, for the first year, we'll be doing the Auk Bay Rotary out there, planting tulips.
So when you say Rotary, roundabout?
The roundabout,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think people got it right away, but I just wanted to clarify.
Right, yeah.
So that's great. So that's a nice, very nice alternative way to give to the community.
Yeah, and that's what the public get to enjoy that too. So, or you can simply donate to the Rotary Club if you don't want to go buy bulbs or mm-hmm. designate bulbs for the roundabouts. So the
bulbs, back to the beginning here, this is a specific fundraiser for your Rotary group, and so therefore the other Rotary group is not doing it at this time. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Like the Downtown Club does the Rotary Roses. That's right. Their fundraiser. And the Valley will do the Duck Derby and a couple other fundraisers too. So this is the equivalent of those for those different Rotary clubs.
And then just Rotary clubs all over the world. I mean, is Rotary bulbs, are these similar? Are these adopted by Rotary worldwide, or is it just unique to Juneau? Or
as far as I know, it's unique to Juneau. There may be a couple others, but it's not a common thing in Rotary. I think it's pretty much unique to Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing.
And typically, is there a fundraising goal, or is just kind of you raise however much you raise, and then?
Well, we try to raise. We try to sell $15,000 to $20,000 worth of bulbs, which we've done throughout the years. So mm-hmm. that's kind of our rough goal there. And then also wanted to mention that if you do want to buy bulbs, but you don't want to plant the darn things, or you can't get out there or don't want to, we have an opportunity where you can hire a bulb planter, a Rotarian. We'll come out there. It's $40 an hour, and that's quite popular, actually. Quite a few people select that because, you know, they don't have the time or the inclination and maybe age or whatever. And so they'll designate a Rotary bulb planter, and we'll come out and we'll plant the bulbs and get them all set for the winter. We also provide bulb fertilizer with our sales, so it helps to winter them over.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of, and sorry if you already mentioned this and I wasn't tracking, but do you already know who's going to be the beneficiary of this fundraiser? Or is that something that you select later in the year?
That's something we select throughout the year.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. Very good. And your yard, I know, is filled with flowers every year, so I imagine that a few of the bulbs end up in your yard.
Yes, I order some, so just a nice splash of color in the springtime before all the other plants start coming up. So it's a great opportunity to do that.
So I'm speaking with Paul Dick here in the studios on a Juneau afternoon. We're talking about the Rotary Bulbs fundraiser that's coming up. Were there other details about the fundraiser that you wanted to make sure you got mentioned here on the program?
Well, I'll just repeat that. You can go online, and that's a really easy way, and a lot of people do that. It's just rotarybulbs.com.
Mm-hmm.
Type that in there, and then you can pick the bulbs you want for the next year. It's a real popular option.
Okay. Well, and we got just a little bit more time here. So Rotary Club in general, just for people, I think people hear Rotary Club, we hear about Rotarians, and a lot of people know a lot about it, but there's probably a lot of people who really don't know much about the Rotary Clubs and what mm-hmm. they do. So do you want to just kind of broad brush about the organization and the services provided?
Sure. So Rotary is an international organization, so we are worldwide. One of the biggest international projects that Rotary does is to fight polio, and it's been very successful, and we've worked actually with the Gates Foundation in a fund matching there, too. But we're down to two countries, Pakistan and I think one African country, but to where there's still polio not eradicated. So that's on an international level, that's what we do. Locally, Rotary clubs throughout the world locally do a lot of community-type projects. So it's a community service organization to anything from sprucing up the community to helping those in need type thing. We do the Glory Hole every month. So part of the funds go towards the Glory Hole, and it's a great cause, and feed the homeless downtown here in Juneau.
And if somebody wanted to learn more about the Rotary Club or possibly get involved with the Rotary Club, what's the first step you take?
Right. Go out on or contact a Rotarian if you know one, or just simply go out to the websites. You can put in Juneau Rotary, and all three clubs will come up. And you can read about it and learn more about the Rotary Club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if you do become a Rotarian, just the time commitment and the kind of the meetings and things like that.
Right. Yeah. We meet once a week throughout the year, except Christmas and Thanksgiving and holidays and that kind of thing. So it's an hour meeting. The Juneau Club downtown meets at noon. We meet in the morning. We're a morning club. Some people like meeting in the morning is better for their schedule. And then there's the Valley Club, and they meet at noon out at the airport. So it's that hour every week. And then volunteering for community organizations such as the Zach Gordon or the Glory Hole or whatnot. So, you know, it's kind of up to the individual how involved they want to get, but it's not a huge time commitment.
Very good. We've been speaking with Paul Dick about the Rotary Bulbs fundraiser. Paul, thanks for coming into the studio, and best of luck with the fundraiser. I hope it goes.
Thanks.
I hope you sell a lot of bulbs.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 16th of September, 2015. It's the birthday of the blues singer, guitarist B.B. King, born Itabena, Mississippi, 1925. His uncle taught him guitar. He bought an $8 guitar for himself to learn on. He found he could make money playing on street corners, more money than he could make doing farm work, and he found he could make more money playing the blues than singing gospel. So he substituted the words "my baby" instead of "my Lord," and he did pretty well. B.B. King, who said, "I stepped out of Mississippi when I was 10 years old, with a suit cut sharp as a razor and a heart made of gold. I had a guitar hanging just about waist high, and I'm going to play this thing until the day I die." He died this past May at the age of 89. It's the birthday of H.A. Ray, born Hamburg, Germany, 1898, married a young artist named Margaret Waldstein. They settled in Paris, and they began writing children's books together. Margaret wrote them, and Hans Ray provided the illustrations. They were in Paris when the Second World War broke out. They'd written a book called Raffi and the Nine Monkeys, about a lonely giraffe opens her home to a family of of monkeys. The youngest monkey was named Fifi, and he was always getting into interesting scrapes. And the Rays decided to write a book just about him. They were at work on that book when they heard the Nazis were going to invade Paris, so they got two bicycles and they gathered up their belongings, including the manuscript, and they rode away from Paris. They were both Jews, so there was urgency to this. They crossed Spain, Portugal, made their way to Brazil, and then to the United States, got to New York City, Greenwich Village, and within a week they found a publisher for their book about the monkey, but the publisher thought that Fifi was a strange name for a male monkey, and so they changed his name to George, Curious George. Book came out in 1941. It was on this date in 1620 the Mayflower set sail for America, a 90-foot ship carrying 102 settlers plus the crew. They were headed for the colony of Virginia. They landed on Cape Cod instead. It's the birthday of Henry V, King of England, born on this day, 1387, the first King of England to grow up speaking and writing fluently in English. Previous kings had spoken French or Saxon. And it's the birthday of James J. Hill, born in southern Ontario, 1838, who built his railroad from the Twin Cities of St. Paul, Minneapolis, to Seattle. 1893 it was finished, the Great Northern Railroad. Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry, Look It Over. I leave behind even my walking stick. My knife is in my pocket, but that I have forgot. I bring no car, no cell phone, no computer, no camera, no CD player, no fax, no TV, not even a book. I go into the woods. I sit on a log, provided at no cost. It is the earth I've come to, the earth itself, sadly abused by the stupidity only humans are capable of, but, as ever, itself, free, a bargain, get it while it lasts. A poem by Wendell Berry, Look It Over, from his new collected poems, published by Counterpoint Press, used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/pool. More information at 586-5325.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Neil Eisman, who is back in Juneau. It's my understanding he's back in Juneau. And I think I'm not quite sure what the title of the topic here would be, body work or mind-body release. There was a few things I saw on the flyer or on your website or what have you. But you're back to work with people in the community on whatever ails them, really. Is that a fair way to present it?
Certainly. I'm a massage therapist. I'm a California certified massage therapist. And I've developed my own approach, which is very different than conventional massage. So for a while, I was telling people I did not massage, which people didn't really understand what not massage was. And I actually, when I was here last year, a woman in Juneau, I had worked on her husband who was a carpenter, and he had injured himself over a period of you know, 50 years and had pain that, you know, he'd been to physical therapy, physicians, and none of them had really given him much relief. And I worked on him, and at least temporarily, his pain was gone. And he couldn't believe it. His wife couldn't believe it. He said it was like voodoo. He didn't really think I had done much, but his pain was gone. And some of it has come back. It's not like it was, you know, a permanent relief for 50 years of being really hard on your body. And he, in his retirement, he's still really hard on his body, and he just doesn't do anything halfway. So anyway, so she helped me actually settle on the name Mind Body Release. I work with the relationship between the mind and the body. That's kind of where I focus, and how the mind influences the body, how we're protecting our body, and kind of immobilizing parts of our body to deal with pain and trauma. And I work with that relationship between the mind and the body. I gently kind of, first off, I just feel what's going on in the body and listen to the body. I feel tension, I feel density, and I feel the way the body tissues are actually moving. And I support the body in just kind of letting go and exploring new ways of being, and exploring the notion that it doesn't have to protect itself as much as it is doing. The protection in the body, the way the body protects itself, tends to linger after it's useful. So you're injured, and your body naturally protects itself by immobilizing itself. And, you know, that's a good thing. If you're really in pain, you don't really want to move part of your body that's in pain too much. But if you don't move it at all, it doesn't heal properly. If you never move it, if you immobilize it and never move it again, it will never heal completely.
So a person contacts you and says, here's my malady, here's my issue, I've tried all these other things and nothing seems to work, and they want to engage your services. How do you start figuring out what it is you're going to do for them, or how you're going to help them?
Well, I talk to them and I find out what they've experienced, what they are looking for. And what I do complements medical treatment, it complements physical therapy. It complements massage therapy and yoga and just about any other approach that people take. It's not a substitute for medical treatment, but it's a different approach, and I've been successful with people that haven't gotten the results they want using any other approach. So I talk to them about what they want, and I tell them about my approach. I refer them to my website, which has a lot of information. You know, if they're the kind of person who likes to go on the computer and read, I have got a lot of information explaining what I do, what people have experienced from my treatments. I have a page about how it works, kind of explaining how it works. For the people who want to know how things work, there's the type of person who wants to know that. I've got an explanation, and I talk about all the, you know, results that people have. It really doesn't matter what I do. If I, you know, if people don't leave feeling better with less stress and less pain and comfort and ease and peace of mind, peace in their body, that's pretty much what I'm going for. And most people that come to see me get a lot of that.
So you're in town just for a few weeks, is that correct?
Yeah.
And where are you based out of?
I'm staying at a friend's condo in the Meninal Valley,
mm-hmm.
near Glacier Valley School. He's in Italy, and I met him last year at a jazz and classics event, and he's been extraordinarily gracious to me.
So you're back in town to help people out, and are you Mary Sturgis?
Yes, I am.
So Mary Sturgis has joined us in the studio, and do you want to introduce Mary?
Well, Mary, we just met about a week ago, and she's a friend of a friend, someone I met last year, And she had a massage table, and she was interested in selling the massage table. And she came to me, and I worked on her, and she loved it, and she gave me her massage table as a trade for the treatment that she had.
And Mary, you had issues that you were not successful in addressing previously prior to working with Neil?
I wouldn't put it like that. First of all, I have to say this is a wonderful town for body workers of all kinds, and I have availed myself of them over time. As Neil said, I was interested in selling my massage table. And when he offered a trade, I declined. I said, I need the cash. But we talked for a while, and he invited me to check out his website, and I was fascinated. And so I set up an appointment and agreed to the trade. And it so happened that the day of our appointment, I came there in a state of profound grief from a loss, a tragedy in our community, as well as, some physical complaints, the usual. Oh, my lower back hurts. My knees are bothering me. And Neil describes himself as a practitioner, a massage therapist who doesn't do massage. And it was not massage. It was light touch. Felt very conscious, like very conscious touch, like strong sense of awareness by the practitioner. And I can't say what else occurred because I don't know, but something changed. And by the time the session was completed, I felt very different. For one, the weight of the grief wasn't as strong in my body. I felt normal, and I felt much, much lighter. And I would also say that there was a deep peace that was conveyed through the treatment. And so it was a day that I particularly needed help, and I certainly got it.
Neil, you're in town for a couple of more weeks, I believe. So if people are interested in learning more about your skills here, then how would they get a hold of you?
Well, I have a phone number, I have an email, and I have a website, so they can take their pick.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
So my phone number is 310-413-8170. A lot of times it goes straight to voicemail because I don't get great reception, so always leave a message. You can send me a text. You can send me an email, which my website is mindbodyrelease.com, and my email is Neil, N-E-I-L, @mindbodyrelease.com.
So before we wrap it up here, anything else you want to just mention about your particular approach to healing?
Well, I love doing this. It's just really a privilege. It's really amazing when I put my hands on someone and I do very little. It seems like the more I learn, the less I do. I do very little, but I'm interacting with people on a very deep level, and I feel their body letting go. I feel them relaxing in a profound way, and it's just magical. It's really wonderful, and I love doing it, and I want to do more of it. And I love Juno, and so I'm glad to be here.
Well, welcome back. Mary, thank you for coming in. And Neil, nice meeting you, and good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity.
This is Bird Note. Phalaropes are sandpipers that make their living from the sea. After breeding on the Arctic tundra, they migrate to the open ocean. They remain there through the winter, feeding on tiny crustaceans and other marine animals, making an amazing adaptation to a completely different environment. Wherever you see them, these little birds will be pecking at the surface of the water. but watch for a bit, and you may see a method of feeding unique to phalaropes. They begin to twirl on the surface like little ballerinas, spinning and pecking again and again. What are they doing? A phalarope spins around once per second, each bird spinning only left or right. As it does so, it forces water away from itself on the surface, causing an upward flow from as deep as a foot or more. With this flow, of course, come the tiny animals on which it feeds. Furthermore, as it opens its bill, it creates still another water current that carries prey into its throat. One of the rewards of observing birds closely is that you see the fascinating strategies they use to survive and thrive. You can see phalaropes in action on our website, birdnote.org. BirdNote writers include Dennis Paulson, Bob Sundstrom, Francis Wood, Todd Peterson, and Ellen Blackstone. I'm Michael Stein.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Jeff Reclow and Matt Lillard from Eagle Crest. Welcome back, you guys.
It's that time of year. We're so excited.
I think this means summer's over, right? When we start cranking up the Eagle Crest conversation again?
Yeah, just about. We're ready to kick it off and get going here this weekend.
Well, you got a big event coming up.
We do. Discover Eagle Crest Day, our seventh annual. Discover Eagle Crest Day is coming up on Saturday. Starting
seventh annual.
I know.
When did that happen?
Right? It just flies by. But it's a great kickoff to the fall season and the coming winter, and we're really excited about it.
So tell us about all of the details here. I read a press release, and you've just got a whole bunch of stuff packed in. So.
Yes. Well, we use Discover Eagle Crest, as Matt said, to kick off the season, but it's also a time to invite people to come up to the mountain. It's a little quieter time. Summer's kind of done, and people are starting to think about fall and just see what Eagle Crest has to offer. And see, we've got, you know, some great hiking trails up there, a new Sourdough Mountain Bike Trail, the phase one of it. We work with Alaska Zipline Adventures and do zip tours. So we feel like, in addition to winter, we just have a lot going on. So Discover Eagle Crest Day is designed to come on up, see what we do, experience it, and also we have season passes on sale at their best rates, our PFD rates, and you can buy snow sports schools programs at their PFD rates, and we just have a whole host of activities to keep you occupied.
And there's a new building, right, or a new expansion. There's a whole new ceremony, right?
Exactly.
Isn't this like the kickoff?
Yes,
to say,
the Porcupine Lodge.
The Porcupine Lodge.
We technically moved in March, but this is the official grand opening of it from a ski operations standpoint. So that will take place at 11 o'clock on Saturday, and it's a great new facility you have at the mountain. It really allows us to move some operations and expand what we do and how we do it, and it'd be a lot more efficient and just a lot better of an experience. So in the Porcupine Lodge, we'll have our ticketing and our snow sports school, much bigger rental area, a great kids program area called the Porcupine Den, the adaptive programming areas over there. And then it also enables us to get some more seasonal lockers, which is always a high-demand item. We've got a long waiting list for many years, so people will finally be able to get off that waiting list and get themselves a locker.
You know, I've been in Juneau long enough to remember when Eagle Crest was just skiing. And Jeff, for just a moment, well, you both have already mentioned quite a few other things that are now offered as part of kind of the complex and the year-round. And I think that's tremendous. So for people who have not availed themselves of these things, I'm guessing if they come up on Saturday and participate, you're going to be able to provide information about all these different all these expanded services that the area now provides year-round?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've made a big push to expand, both our skiing and snowboarding operations and offerings. And we certainly have a lot of great things for both returning and new skiers and snowboarders. But, as we mentioned, the Alaska Zipline Adventures is a great partner of ours and runs a really fantastic summer operation. And we really made a push this summer and building into it the past couple of years for a new mountain bike, downhill mountain bike trail, which is the first and only dedicated mountain bike trail in Juneau. And phase one of that is done. And that's in conjunction with the Juneau Mountain Bike Alliance. And then just a lot of hiking trails and new opportunities to get up and around the mountains. So it was a big thing that came out of the Skiria Board's master planning process and a really big desire of the Juneau community. So that combined with all the ski and snowboard operations is great. And just all of our partners coming up and getting together for a day is a wonderful way to kick off fall and winter.
And I think we've also created this event with the folks that don't know much about Eagle Crest or have moved to, are new to the community, decided this is the year they want to learn how to ski or snowboard. So we'll have a lot of information about skiing and snowboarding, how to get involved in the sport, how to sign up for lessons. And we're also going to have gear fitting seminars up in, we call it our boardroom, which is our classroom in the Porcupine Lodge. So you or the kids or anyone, you can come up, get fit for gear. The kids can put on a pair of ski boots and tromp around in the boardroom. You can chomp around in ski boots or snowboard boots and just kind of check out the equipment and see what it's all about.
And for people who come up, I imagine there's going to be food and beverage available. Am I correct?
Yes. We've been working with Fat Mo's, so they're going to be selling their homemade barbecue starting at 11 o'clock up on the mountain. We also will have Peterson's Pretzels will be there selling his pretzels. Mountain Lift Coffee will be there, and she'll be brewing up some coffee and smoothies. And then we'll have the Alaska Zipline Alpine Beer and Wine Garden. So a little bit of mixture of food and beverages for everybody in all ages. And so it's just designed to come up, explore the mountain, spend the day with us.
Did I see disc golf listed somewhere as well?
Yep, Discovery Southeast is, we partner with them, and they're doing a disc golf course there. It'll be in the upper parking lot, and we're also going to be running the Porcupine Chairlift starting at 11 o'clock, so you can take a ride on the Porcupine Chair and walk down. And we partnered with the Juneau Public Library, and they're going to have some storyboards on the way down, and they'll also be doing some story time in the day lodge.
So coming off of this summer, I'm assuming there's kind of a skeleton crew there in the summer, or is it? Give me a sense of what it's been like this summer, and
yeah, certainly. It's definitely a skeleton crew. I mean, in the winter, we'll balloon to about 120 employees, of varying, you know, part time and full time. But in the summer, we've got a full time crew of about 5 to 6 people.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly, mountain operation staff and administrative staff, and then some more people doing some brushing. We have had some more people on the mountain activity with our new road to the top of the Hooter Chairlift and hiking trail, and then our new mountain bike trail. But generally speaking, this is also a good way for us to welcome back a lot of our staff, and a lot of our returning staff will come up and give us a hand for this day as well. So it's just a lot of fun to see a lot of our winter guests and winter coworkers that we don't get to see all summer. It'll be the first time, and we'll get all excited for winter and have lots of discussions about all the snow that's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a great time, too. We have some people who are in transition with summer employment, looking for a winter employment. So we'll have an employment table. So have the opportunity to talk to some of us, find out what opportunities are up there for winter employment, and put an application in. So just a full day of events and activities and information.
Sounds great. And then looking ahead, of course, we need snow. So we'll just assume there's going to be plenty of snow this year. But looking beyond that, in terms of Eagle Crest kind of expanding and growing, you referenced the master plan, and a lot of these developments in recent years are part of that plan. What's next? What's the next phase of?
Yes, certainly. I mean, the Porcupine Lodge was our biggest facilities base area development, and it's a huge step forward, and is really going to serve Eagle Crest and the community really well for years to come. But up on the mountain, as I mentioned, with the master plan, the biggest request from the community was really multi-use trails and more hiking trails. So that's where we're focusing a lot of our time. And resources. We've got a great trails plan, and we've got our Army Corps of Engineers permit this past summer to start that process. It's about a 3 to 5 year process, what we have in front of us right now. So it really got started with our new road and hiking trail to the top of Hooter and the mountain bike trail, and then we're going to move up on top of the ridge and get a great trail out to the overlook to look over Stevens Passage, and then continue on over to Dix Lake and up to Cropley Lake at some point as well. So it's an aggressive plan. But we think we can tackle it and get a lot more opportunities for people to enjoy the mountain, not just in winter, but summer as well.
Well, I'll testify here for you. It's wonderful to be able to drive up. Is the lodge at 1,800 feet, or I forget how?
It is. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so to get the first 1,800 feet taken care of in an automobile, and then to have some relative ease for hiking up on one of the roads or what have you to get to the ridge is awesome. It's a great way to get up high and have the alpine views and everything. So the thought of expansion of hiking opportunities in your area sounds great.
Yeah, it really is fantastic, and I'm so new to Juneau, I don't remember the days before the road, but from what Jeffrey and my staff can attest to, it's a whole different experience, and really, you know, that road enables so many more people to enjoy that alpine experience relatively easily.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's one of the things that we'll showcase this weekend, too, is just let people know that what you already know, that it's a great place to get to the high alpine, or you go take a stroll through the Lower Nordic Trail and through the meadows and down the Fish Creek. And just it's a great place to get outside and enjoy that alpine environment.
So we're speaking with Jeffrey Clough and Matt Lillard from Eagle Crest. They've got a big, big day coming up on September 19th, Discover Eagle Crest Day. Anything on your list of things that you wanted to mention that you haven't gotten to yet?
I think any information on Eagle Crest, go to our website, which is skijuneau.com. And as we've discussed, we will have snow this winter. We're excited for the upcoming winter, and season passes are on sale now. And you can get those at Discover Eagle Crest Day, online at skijuneau.com, at Foggy Mountain Shop, or at Nugget Alaskan Outfitters.
Matt, anything else?
All right, we covered most of it. We're really excited to welcome everybody back and start talking winter and get ready for it.
Matt and Jeffra, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
A confused debate over the Iran nuclear deal ends in Congress. The story is just beginning.
Getting the deal was difficult. Winning acceptance in Congress was harder, but we've seen the easier parts.
I'm Steve Inskeep. We'll discuss the past, present, and future of the Iran deal. It's a special broadcast from NPR News.
Thursday at 7 on KTOO News, Juneau.
And we're listening to Sean Tracy with Andrew Heist. He's got a new album release coming up on the 19th at 7 p.m. at Paradise Cafe. Sean Tracy, good to hear him here on a Juneau afternoon. And tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, the guest will be Bob Holman. He'll be talking about the upcoming Language Matters film about Indigenous language, which will be screened at the UAS Egan Room. Christy Erickson will be here with details about this week's Poetry Slam. James Wyckoff will be in the studio to talk about the upcoming community garage sale, and we'll hear about art happenings in Juneau during Arts Up. That's tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon. And the weather forecast for today and tonight and tomorrow, you guessed it, there's showers, there's rain, there's fall weather in the forecast, so no surprise there. So thank you for listening to A Juneau Afternoon. My name's Jamie Waste. I've been your host. A big thanks to Jeff Brown for producing A Juneau Afternoon throughout the year. And stay tuned for All Things Considered.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K27.